shoot it. The date is March 27th, 2019. Welcome to the Court of Appeals. We had a power outage last night. We weren't sure we were going to have lights in the courtroom. Glad to see that we do. Our first case is in the matter of the civil commitment of Carl Leonard Meyer. Each side will have 15 minutes for argument. The appellant will have additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. We ask that each attorney identify themselves before they begin their presentation. You may begin when ready.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Mark Gray. I represent the appellant, Carl Meyer, and I'm hoping this court can shed some light on the meaning of the word recent as used in Minnesota statutes. That's the real thrust of my case, appellant's case, is has there been recent conduct on Mr. Meyer's part such as to justify his commitment as a mentally ill person? I acknowledge that Mr. Meyer is mentally ill. He has a substantial psychiatric disorder. I acknowledge that in my brief. He has a history of a substantial psychiatric disorder. We do not commit people in Minnesota just because they have a substantial psychiatric disorder. We commit people in Minnesota because of the law, which says you can be determined to be a mentally ill person if and only if you have a substantial psychiatric disorder and there's been recent conduct as a result of that disorder that threatens someone else, you have hurt someone else or threatened someone else. And that our case is such that we do not believe that the trial court had any recent conduct by Mr. Meyer such as to justify his commitment as a mentally ill person.
Can you help me clear up something in the record?
Absolutely.
The district court made a number of fact findings of threatening behavior, dangerous behavior, without saying what that behavior was or comments were. Can you identify in the record the clearest statement that you would acknowledge to be fairly construed as a threat or reasonably construed as a threat?
Your Honor, I went through the comments of the statements of findings of fact of the court in my brief. The things that I cite in my brief, unless I'm missing something, are vague, such as my client is said to have said, when the time comes to bear arms in the defense of liberty, maybe as soon as now, I will be provided with a suitable weapon by one of my compatriots. So it's pretty vague to me. It doesn't say I'm going to do this tomorrow. And it doesn't say what he's going to do and when he's going to do it. But that's the type of statement the court uses in terms of my client's anything that could be described as recent, let's say in the last 3, 6, 9, or even 12 months. So trial court went into great detail. And a respondent's brief goes into great detail on the events of 2009. We're at 2018 at the time of the trial. How do the events of 2009 support the idea that there's been a recent act by my client to put others in danger, to threaten others or put them in danger?
Can you tell me whether there's a typo regarding that? I saw the district court on page 5 of its decision saying that in 2009, respondent had a sexually inappropriate relationship with 13-year-old. In the next sentence, it's on June 15, 2019. Is there a typo or was there a connection between the 2000, I wasn't clear about the connection between the past and the present, if there was a connection.
You said June of 2019?
2019.
June?
On page A5 in your brief.
It hasn't occurred yet.
It hasn't occurred yet. Okay. So is it 2009? Was that what the district court was in? Was it a typo, I guess, is what I'm asking.
It must be, Your Honor. I mean, it's basically 2 pages of argument by respondent in his brief, starting at page 4. He describes how in 2009, Mr. Meyer engaged in inappropriate conduct and went through the criminal process, again, in 2009.
I'm referring to the officer's dispatch to the Teen Outreach Center. Can you tell me whether that was in 2009?
I'm sorry, was it in 2009?
Yes, or was that a more recent event?
I don't recall. I didn't argue that in my brief that
okay,
I recall.
That's fine.
I think, again, we're going back a fairly long period of time here to search for anything that can support a commitment.
Well, in that case, we are. Could you address the testimony given by the examiner, Ms. Jamieson, as to what she said were recent events of attempts or threats to physically harm himself or others?
Your Honor, I don't think there was a basis in the record for her to say those things. I'm trying to look for...
I think it had to do with 2018, which she would regard as infatuation, perhaps, with E.H., and as well as the incident in 2014, which you can argue isn't recent, but...
I agree. 2014 is not recent. The events of 2018... They may amount to being disturbing, but the child or the young adult involved never testified at trial. She was never contacted by Mr. Meyer. He never walked up to her and handed her anything. And so Dr. Jamieson based it on him creating a plaque to honor her achievement, which he read about in the Sun newspaper. I think he approached the school hoping to give it to her to honor her achievement, but he never talked to her. He never, I don't think she ever saw him. I don't think he ever saw her, but that concerned Dr. Jamieson. I understand that, okay? But it's pure speculation. It's pure speculation, which is not allowed by McGaughey to enter an order committing someone. What would he have done had he seen her? What would he have done? Pure speculation. He did not see her. She did not see him. She did not testify at trial. Oh, this was a disturbing incident. We don't know how it affected her, but it wouldn't have been relevant if there had been no contact, if he had not approached her and scared her in some way, physically.
I take it, based on your comments, that the testimony regarding SK would also be stale in your mind because it's 2014?
Absolutely, Your Honor. I mean, that's, again, I hope this court can shed light on recent. In my view, no one should be put into a state hospital for treatment of mental illness because they have a mental disorder and something they said or did.
But it did
4 years ago
resurface in 2018, didn't it, with SK? Began contacting him?
Oh, right. You're right, absolutely. SK did not testify at trial. He did not testify that he was concerned. He did not testify that he was attacked in any way or felt that he was in danger from Mr. Meyer. No testimony from SK. I'm sorry, I missed the reference to SK.
So when the court found that SK was frightened and intimidated by the 5 a.m. phone call, and this is in July of 18, I believe, the court just jumped to that, or are you saying there was nobody who testified to that one way?
SK didn't testify.
Well, did someone else testify to that effect?
It would have been hearsay if someone else told the court that SK was intimidated by a phone call at 5 in the morning. And again, the court has to vet these things. The court has to look at the...
But was the hearsay admitted?
I'm sorry?
But was the hearsay admitted?
I don't know if it's... I don't know, Your Honor, if it was objected to. Even if admitted, the court still has to vet it, in my view of the law.
But if it wasn't challenged and the district court accepted on the substance, then on appeal, how do we approach that evidence?
In other words, it was objected to, I believe, on relevance grounds, but not on reliability.
I think under the case law, the court still has to vet medical records with hundreds of pages of medical records that come in, and many of the entries in medical records are just pure hearsay. And the court has to look at all those entries. And if it's going to make a finding...
Well, the district court can accept hearsay if the district court deems it's reliable and not objected to.
And if it makes a determination that it was reliable, too,
apparently,
Your Honor, that the circumstances surrounding the hearsay make it seem reliable to the court. That wasn't done here.
Well, there's no challenge to reliability, though. It was on cumulative grounds and relevance at trial.
I'm sorry?
There was no challenge to reliability at the hearing. It was on relevance and cumulative nature of the evidence. Right?
I agree.
Okay.
But the court still has to look at the reliability, even if it allows it in.
How would you...
But why wouldn't we accept that the district... Since the district court apparently did rely upon that evidence, and we can infer that the district court deemed it reliable, if it wasn't challenged on reliability grounds, on what legal basis would we on appeal reject that evidence?
Because the statute says there has to be a recent attempt or a recent threat to harm self or others. I just don't see how that is a threat to call someone at 5 in the morning, unless you're saying at 5 in the morning, I'm going to blank you.
Do we know the substance of that 5 in the morning call?
It's not in the court's findings. I don't know the answer.
Part of the troubling nature of this is that you acknowledge his mental illness, correct?
Absolutely. You said that,
okay, and he applies for a gun permit, and he has made comments about law enforcement, and this is all in 2018, and that's recent. So why isn't that a concern or a proper basis for the court to have made this determination?
It's speculative whether he's going to get a gun permit or get a gun. That's speculation.
Well, let's hope he didn't. I mean,
and so for the court to say, well, he wants to get a gun. He has said things that he wants to fight the police, which.
Well, he applied for a permit, did he not? To purchase transfer.
I believe he did. Your
okay, so it wasn't speculative in that sense. He was making a move to get a firearm.
Right, but the question is, what was he going to do with the firearm?
Okay,
can you commit someone with a history of mental illness because they walk into a police station and apply for a gun? Oh, commit him, send him to an OCA? I think you have to have more than that, more than walking in applying for a gun. If he said to the registrar, I'm going to apply for a gun and I'm going to use it here and here, then you've got him. But just applying for a gun, I don't see how the court could lower the bar for commitment as a mentally ill person when the court says recent attempt or threat to harm self or others.
I saw a reference in the record. I don't recall whether it was the district court's findings or if it was a quote in respondent's brief regarding shooting up someplace. Can you shed some light on that comment? On that quote?
No, I saw nothing that I recall in the trial court's findings. And I don't recall reading that in respondent's brief. Obviously, I would find that very concerning if that was in the trial court's order.
I believe, there are exhibits reflecting, I think, records from his stay at Birchwood Home Care, where he planned to buy 10 specialized weapons and find 9 other people to go with him to shoot up City Hall protesting the 14th Amendment about making children go to school. He also said, according to these records, I think I want to get a machine gun and use it upon the Minneapolis Police Department.
And that was in the trial court's decision?
No. This is in an exhibit, according to my notes here, in an exhibit that was, and I think the exhibits are documents. I haven't seen the exhibits, but I think they're documents of records from the Birchwood Home Care.
I don't think the trial court credited that statement in any way, shape, or form.
No, but I mean the trial court made very general statements about threats to police and threats to other public officials, and I was looking for evidence in the record that would support those general findings. Doesn't that evidence support those findings?
Only if the trial court determines that it's been proven by clear and convincing evidence that he said those things, that it was reliable, it was vetted by the trial court and determined to be reliable.
Would you agree?
And
that
it's not in the decision. So what am I to take from that?
The specifics are not in the decision, correct? But I think there are general findings in the decision that reflect those threats statements.
I think the findings the trial court made really are speculation, Your Honor, with all due respect. There isn't a statement that he intends to hurt someone, has hurt someone in the past, and intends to hurt a specific person going forward.
I'm going to ask you to speak about the recency argument. So what's your position as to whether the district court can consider old references, old threatening comments, if a recent act ties those threats to today, and to remove the veil from what I'm asking about, if the district court accepted as true that your client made statements about shooting up City Hall or taking a machine gun to police officers in the past, and then recently applies for a gun permit, does district court is the district court foreclosed from tying that past conduct to the recent conduct in determining the recency of the threat?
As I read the law, the trial court has to have the integrity to say, that's not recent. 3-4 years ago, when that was said or when that was done, and now we have him applying for a gun permit, that connects the dots, and we're going to put people like that in a hospital bed? The statute says a recent attempt or threat to harm self or others. I think drawing the line between those dots, to me, that's speculation.
So is it your position that you can never connect those dots? What if he had, for example, applied for a gun permit and in that conversation mentioned that he was looking for a machine gun in particular? Would that be enough to tie the past to the present? Are you saying that it's never permitted to
I just don't draw a see connection? A threat to physically harm someone in that by saying 3-4 years ago he said this, but he didn't carry it out 3-4 years ago, and now he's applying for a gun permit, therefore we're going to connect the dots, commit this gentleman, in essence, because of something he said or did 3-4 years ago.
Could I ask one more question, Judge Clear? So how, if the issue is recent, I mean, how would you define the word recent as used in this statute, or how would you urge us to define it? Specifically, what are the outer limits of,
I think one
of recency?
Year. Personally, I think anything going back 1 year is fair game for someone's behavior based on the words they say and their behavior based on the statute. I understand it's not defined, and I hope this court can help us, because trial courts don't have a clear idea of whether 3 months is enough, 6 months, 9 months, or 12 months, or 5 years. Is that recent? I don't think so, but...
All right, Mr. Greer, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is John Kerwin. I'm an assistant Hennepin County attorney, and I represent the respondent in this appeal, who is the petitioner in the underlying commitment case.
Counsel, as long as Judge Johnson asked that question, I'm going to ask you to answer what your take on recent is.
Your Honor, I'm not sure exactly where that line is. I think for the purposes of this case, it's sufficient that the parties agree that at least the last year is recent. Okay. Because the conduct that we're relying on, and I believe that the court relied upon, to support commitment all occurred within a year before the commitment petition. But going to some of the other questions the court has posed, just some general issues before we talk about the specific behavior in this case.
Before you get to those generals, can I ask you an even bigger general? And then you can focus on the discussion that you were commencing. So the district court doesn't seem to have ever specified under which of the four paragraphs it was finding that this possession of a substantial likelihood of physical harm to self or others. It can be demonstrated by one of four ways, one of which is recent attempt to or threat to physically harm self or others, but there's four others. Under paragraph C, this reference to recent attempt or threat to physically harm self or others, do you agree that that's the only one of the four provisions that would apply here?
Yes, and I think that was reasonably clear from the court's order, and that really what we're talking about is then not even threats to harm self, but threats to others. So I think we're limited to that kind of narrow application of the statute.
All right, so sorry I took you off track.
No, thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, you had asked questions about the significance of older incidents, ones that weren't recent, and how those might be used to interpret the significance of current incidents. And this court addressed that in the Hoffmaster case, which we cite at page 30 of our brief. And the court said, of course, you can consider the person's entire history in terms of evaluating whether the incidents in question meet the harmfulness requirements of the statute. That's simply a matter of common sense. The other general issue I want to talk about before I talk about specific behaviors here is what it means for something to be a threat of physical harm to another. And I discussed this at page 21 of the respondent's brief. And the Burmeister case there makes it clear that you don't need, the person needn't have expressed a threat, you know, made a statement to someone, I am going to harm you. All that's necessary is that the person has engaged in conduct that poses a threat. And so, for example, in that case, a person had started a fire in a reckless way that endangered other people, perhaps not intending to hurt anyone, but due to his poor judgment resulting from his mental illness. So the test is whether something poses a threat, not whether a threat is expressed. I believe the district court relied on three instances or sets of behaviors, and those are the ones the respondent relies on in asserting that Mr. Meyer engaged in conduct that posed a threat of physical harm to others. And those were the statements about obtaining a gun, including a machine gun, and I'll discuss that with the court's permission in more detail. This bizarre fixation on and behavior towards this 12-year-old girl, which terrorized her parents, understandably, and then his conduct towards the aging attorney, who the court has referred to as SK. To address the first of those, the obtaining a gun, as this court has acknowledged and the district court summarized in its order, Mr. Meyer had actually taken concrete action, unsuccessful, but he'd taken concrete action to attempt to obtain a gun. He'd applied for a gun permit. It was denied based on his history of civil commitment for mental illness. And then he wrote a letter to the police chief saying, when the time comes to bear arms in defense of our mutual liberty, maybe as soon as now, I will be provided with a suitable weapon by one of my compatriots.
Now, is there any evidence that he has any, I mean, this is a schizophrenic individual, significant mental health issues. Is there any, and he's got delusions about everything, is there any evidence in the record that he has a compatriot who possesses a firearm and would be willing to provide it to him?
No, Your Honor, I'm not, there was no evidence in this record of that. What is true, of course, as the court knows from handling cases and reading the newspapers, is people can obtain weapons. Even people who can't get gun permits can obtain weapons. And Mr. Meyer had indicated over and over and over again, including many times within the year prior to his commitment, his interest in obtaining weapons, including a machine gun. He stated he had the right to raise a militia to fight against the government. His psychiatrist said he was concerned about Mr. Meyer leaving the group home that he was in once his earlier commitment expired because of the statements about wanting to fight the police that Judge Johnson referred to. When Mr. Meyer was later at HCMC.
How recent was the fight the police comment?
I think the fight the police comments were years earlier.
Okay, but, so what's the most recent comment he made that would support a recent threat with regard to firearms?
Your Honor, when Mr. Meyer was at the hospital, HCMC, immediately before his commitment, days before his commitment, he referred to enemies, including teachers, parents, police, and government. He said his retribution for being required to go to school for 12 years was when John Hinckley shot President Reagan. He described enemies of God, including police officers and Islamists. And he said that when those people were killed or injured, it was on dates on which restrictions had been placed on Mr. Meyer. So he tied the violent actions against these police officers to things in his own life. When the court's most recent, during the commitment process, when the court's examiner interviewed Mr. Meyer, he told her that because he makes controversial comments on social media, he said it was prudent for me to own a gun in case I was tracked and assaulted by a fanatic.
Now, that was, when I saw that comment, I thought, that's the only place that I saw where he was making a connection explaining why he wanted a gun now, which would be, according to him, self-defense, as opposed to a reference to police or a reference to attacking anyone in recent history.
Two points, Your Honor. One, in late 2017, and so within the one-year parameter that Mr. Gray's acknowledged, he did make statements at the Birchwood group home that he had a right to have a machine gun, and he had a delusion, they said, about raising a militia to fight against the government. Okay, so that's a statement that he made about guns and fighting. The statement to the examiner, this conditional statement, I think the lower court was also right to be concerned about that, and the examiner's right to be concerned about it. Because even though it's conditional, he says, I'll only use it if necessary to defend myself against people. He had such impaired judgment about who posed a threat to him. And that was made clear by his many statements throughout the records. He regarded people as a threat to him based on his paranoid delusions. And so this person who has...
Would you agree it's never safe, always dangerous for an individual diagnosed with schizophrenia to possess a firearm? Delusional individual?
Not sure I'm willing to agree with that categorically, but I understand the concern that...
I mean, you're prohibited even from getting obtaining a license.
Yeah. The legislature's made that determination.
Right. So the legislature believes it's dangerous.
Yeah.
I'm wondering whether there's a slippery slope here. I'm trying to get a sense of where the line would be drawn. If we recognize that it's always dangerous for a person with that degree of significant mental health issue and that type of disorder to possess a firearm, I'm wondering whether in every circumstance, someone who's schizophrenic walks into a police department and applies for a firearm would necessarily qualify for civil commitment under the rationale that the district court applied in this case.
I'm not sure, Your Honor, whether that would be true. But in this case, as we've just discussed, there's much more than just his having applied for the firearm. I mean, he made many statements about his paranoia about people, his desire to obtain guns relating to that paranoia against people. I think here there was ample basis for the district court to determine that this person, based on these threatening statements he made, statements that posed a threat, that there was a significant danger to other persons as a result of his mental illness.
And just to be clear, your position is that his conduct with respect to Mr. Kaplan was an attempt or a threat?
That is our position, Your Honor. I would say if I rank the three things we listed in our brief, that's probably third in line.
What's first?
First, Your Honor, I would say is the discussion that we've just had about the guns. The second is his fixation regarding the 12-year-old girl.
Let me ask it a different way, going to Judge Johnson's question about your prioritization. Let's assume the first of the three categories of threat, as found by the district court, didn't exist, didn't happen. Would we be here? I know the circumstances might not have gotten us here, but because it was the application for the permit that got law enforcement's attention. But if that hadn't happened, would the facts be sufficient to support a commitment in this case, do you believe?
I think, Your Honor, I've thought about that, and I think that we would still be here. A little bit oddly, the thing that really brought this to a head and got Mr. Meyer to the hospital was not the concern about the guns, but was the incident with the 12-year-old girl. And that's what prompted the mental health crisis team to come out and meet with him and have him transported to the hospital. And I think the concern there is, because of my limited time, I won't...
But the 12-year-old girl, we're talking about not his 2009 conduct. We're talking about him trying to provide an award of some type?
Yes, yeah.
Counsel, on that issue, you're suggesting under Hoffmeister that we can go back and connect the 2009?
Yes, certainly. Right. And I think that the connection, you know, there might be other ways, but I think it's the earlier one is relevant in at least two ways. One, it shows that absent constraints being put on Mr. Meyer, the length that he would go to continue this obsessive behavior that he had towards the young girl in 2009 and now towards this girl in 2012.
These are different girls.
A different girl. And in the situation in 2012 didn't get as far because the intervention occurred more quickly, even though after the trial, in a continued demonstration of complete lack of good judgment due to mental illness, Mr.
Was there any evidence in the record in this case that his fixation on the current young girl is sexual in nature and consistent with his
previous behavior? Your Honor, there certainly isn't any direct evidence, and I would say that the only two things that might suggest that are what occurred in 2009. And I'm not trying to overstate that, but in answer to your question, I think that might suggest some sexual motivation.
That's a real stretch, isn't it, in light of the fact that there's no conduct?
Yeah, I think it is, and I didn't make that argument, but if you're asking me what might suggest it, I think
that's one thing
that might suggest it. And I think the other thing that might suggest
Excuse me, Counsel, the connection is that the 2009 girl was 13 and the girl here was 12.
Right.
So it's the age of
they were almost exactly the same age. I think the other thing that suggests some sexual motivation here, two other things. One is you'll see references throughout the record to Mr. Meyer's sexual writings, sexual obsessions. The court examiner described him as, I forget the term, but essentially sexually hypersexual. But the other thing is there were pictures of only two adolescents in the newspaper article that Mr. Meyer looked at. There were references to others, but there were pictures of two. The other was a boy. Mr. Meyer focused on this person because he said her picture was more attractive or more appealing, he said. And but I think that, may I just,
yeah, just
finish
to wrap
a thought?
It up, yeah.
I think the point regarding the actions towards the 12-year-old girl is that if you look at the totality of those circumstances, you can understand why her parents would be absolutely terrorized by what had happened and by the fact that this person with this history that they learned about was now obsessed about their daughter. And this was behavior that was so emotionally distressing that it could be expected to, and that it did actually cause physical harm to the parents.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Kerwin.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Graham.
I dealt with that last question about physical harm to the parents in my brief, and I will just briefly say that the statute doesn't mention anything about the effect on third parties of the conduct of someone who the court is about to or has committed. This 12-year-old girl did not testify at the trial. She did not, that I know of, express any fear that she was going to be molested or physically harmed by Mr. Meyer. And to commit him because her parents were terrorized is really lowering the bar to commitment in this state. It's just third parties can come in and say, I'm terrorized by that activity. Put that person in a hospital bed and keep them there for 6 months. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. It's not the way I read the statute for recent conduct.
Couldn't that incident be construed to be an attempt to cause harm to her, the girl?
I just think that's pure speculation what he wanted to do. And because the 2009 incident involved sexual ideation or sexual thoughts about the young woman, you're connecting the dots or trying to connect the dots to say, well, he wanted to present an award, but he maybe underneath he wanted sexual activity. It's just too much speculation for my thinking.
Well, if a person did not have a history of doing that with person of the similar age, then that would be more speculative, but because of his history, then
I just think it's still speculative because it didn't come up. There's nothing in the trial court record that says he had his sexual intentions for this child. He wanted to give her an award, and what he thought in his heart beyond that is pure speculation, I think.
So Mr. Kerwin emphasize the Burmeister case, which interprets the statute to be, it does not require an expression of a attempt of a threat, but if the situation doesn't require maybe the specific intent, but if the situation poses a threat, then the statute is satisfied. You didn't do a reply brief, so we don't know your response or rebuttal to that argument.
Well, no, I didn't. And the Burmeister case involved someone who started a fire, so there was an overt act in the Burmeister
sure,
case.
Different facts, but yet the way it interpreted the statute in that case is relevant here, it seems.
I think McGaughy's been decided since Burmeister, and I think
McGaughy
has been decided since Burmeister, and I'm not saying they're in conflict, but McGaughy says you can't speculate the way the trial court did in McGaughy. Mr. Kerwin says that because Mr. Meyer lacks or has such impaired judgment, that somehow bootstraps the incidents into they're greater because he has impaired judgment. And I don't see the statute as saying that you can amplify something like wanting to give a 12-year-old an award to conduct that is a threat to that 12-year-old because the person has impaired judgment. So we must then assume because the person has impaired judgment, there's greater intention than just to give this person an award.
I asked Mr. Kerwin a similar question I'll ask you now. If the firearm incident, the firearm acquisition interest exhibited by your client's application for a permit to purchase a firearm sufficiently bridges to his 2017 comments about being interested in developing a militia and opposing the police, if we were to determine that that's a threat and recent enough, would you agree that the other two categories would not be necessary to support commitment?
I agree.
So can you address that bridge that Mr. Kerwin pointed to, that these statements in late 2017, which would fit your definition of recency, your client's interest in developing a militia, his right to have firearms, and then his statement that he could acquire firearms if the need arises, apparently even without a permit?
I don't see how any of that would allow a court to say the discussions that he had in 2017, the attempt to buy a gun, mean that there's clear and convincing evidence that he intended to harm someone. That's my problem with that analysis, and the idea is that
Do you need intent to harm? Is that the standard, clear and convincing evidence of intent to harm?
You need conduct, in my view, or statements, not just I want to raise a militia, I'm angry against police for what we see them doing to people like Philando Castillo. I'm angry, and I want to get a gun. I don't see how that says Mr. Gray or Mr. Meyer, therefore, should be committed because that is an act of danger sufficient under the statute with substantial psychiatric disorder to place him in a locked psychiatric unit. I think you need a greater connection between those things, especially what happened today. More recently, applying for a gun. I mean, that's ill-advised, of course, but applying for a gun is speculation as to what he would have done with that gun or wanted to do with the gun. No one ever said, determined that. Thank you, Bert.
Right. Thank you, counsel. Thank you both. The matter is submitted. Opinion will issue within 90 days.